Now let's set the scene. An eccentric rich guy shakes up the world with a big announcement at a press conference.
I'm just not the hero type, clearly, with this laundry list of character defects, all the mistakes I made, largely public. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Truth is, I am Iron Man.
Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark in the original Iron Man movie. That announcement ends the movie and begins one of the biggest pop culture franchises ever, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Spanning a few dozen-ish movies and counting, plus some TV series too, sort of, Marvel superheroes live in a shared universe and a developing plotline that's dominated pop culture, made tons of money, and influenced other creators. And our next guests say the Marvel Cinematic Universe is packed with political messages that reflect the culture of their time and can influence it in turn. They've edited a new book tracing some of those messages. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts about the political and social messages that you've seen in a superhero movie or show or a comic book? Or are you going to superhero stories to get away from all that stuff? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Our guests are the editors of the new book, The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Nicholas Carnes is a professor of public policy at Duke University. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
And Lily J. Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on today, Rob.
Lily, let's start with you. If we want to learn about our political world, why turn to pop culture?
I've long studied popular culture, and popular culture often reflects back the realities of our lived experiences in so many different kinds of messages and in so many different kinds of presentations and representations. And so while popular culture, be it televisual or cinematic or video games or music, are also forms of entertainment and capitalism, they also talk to us a lot about who we are and what we do.
Okay, Nick, why the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Well, I focus on just the sheer scope of it. I mean, we're up to 30 films, 9 Disney Plus shows, and, you know, films are regularly making close to or more than $1 billion at the box office. So part of the appeal of studying this sort of entertainment franchise is just the sheer number of people watching it and thinking about it. And as a political scientist, that's a site where I really want to know, okay, what are the messages? What are the political messages it's sending?
And Lily, is there something inherent in a superhero story? You talk about this, I think it was in the introduction the two of you wrote to the book, that there are big problems that only amazing individuals can save us from.
Yeah, I mean, superheroes occupy a space that is one that is generally not, quote, democratically, small d, democratically elected. So they operate usually outside of a governmental system, which can be somewhat problematic. And then we look to them to solve problems that we ourselves cannot get ourselves to solve with their superhero capacities. And that perhaps gives us, unfortunately, the out of never being able to solve other problems that we face on the regular basis, because we always want superheroes to solve those problems.
And Nick, looking at the different pieces in your book, the different Marvel movies, if we're going in looking for one political message, we might be in trouble. I mean, there's so much variety here. You and the authors of pieces in your book, it seems like they found a pretty wide variety of messages, sometimes even conflicting with each other.
That's right. And that's why this volume is sort of drawing on more than 30 political scientists' expertise on a wide range of topics, because when you have so many films with so many different creative teams, there's actually a lot of variety. And there's no one sort of single message that I think is coming out of this cinematic franchise. So we really need it. I mean, when Lily and I sort of started working on this project, I think we realized really early on, it had to be a big team effort to even, you know, sort of scratch the surface at understanding of, you know, what's going on in this huge amount of cinema and pop culture text.
We're talking to political scientist Nicholas Carnes and Lily Gorin, co-editors of the new book, The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see political or social messages coming through? Do you think they're on purpose or accidental? Do you like those messages when you're going to see that big Marvel blockbuster or the TV show? Or if you're reading the comics, the book doesn't go there, but you can. 800-642-1234 is the number. Jake joins us now in Appleton. Jake, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just want to say that I'll argue that I don't believe there's political messaging in this, simply because I don't believe political messaging is a big draw for movie and theater appreciation or just people who enjoy cinema. And I'm sure we could look at older movies like The Wizard of Oz and things like The Lion King and probably find similarities to political messaging, simply because the last 5-6 years has been extremely deep in like exposure, like I more in my lifetime than I remember. So that's my comment on it.
Jake, thanks for the call. And Lily, maybe we're going to these movies for escapism. If there are political messages in there, they just kind of wash over us because we're there for the story of the special effects.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that we're not necessarily talking about a writing team or a directing or producing team that sits down and say, we want to communicate this particular right. message. But messages are communicated. And there are lots of different kinds of messages that are communicated about race, about gender, about sexuality, about power, about governmental structures, about the military. And so, again, it's not necessarily that there is a finely crafted message that is the narrative, but the narrative does communicate a variety of political messages.
Jake, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. I wanted to get into some for instances and check out the chapters each of you contributed to this book. Nick, let's start with yours. You tackled the U.S. government appears a lot in these movies and TV shows. You tackled, are they portrayed positively or negatively? How'd you do that briefly? What did you find?
So one of the things I was interested in when we first started thinking about the MCU and what sort of the subtle political messages might be is when the U.S. government is on screen, is it a good guy or a bad guy, right? So there's this idea that Lily referred to that, you know, superheroes kind of solve the problems that governments can't. It wouldn't be a very interesting movie if, you know, a villain showed up and, you know, Congress passed a law and solved it. That might not be what people are looking for when they want to go see a blockbuster. So then the question is, well, okay, so what is government's function in here? Is it sort of a hapless, you know, we can't do anything and the heroes come and save us? Is it potentially an adversary? Is it corrupt? Is it, you know, working against the heroes? And so I worked with a couple of research assistants to actually code every single instance when the U.S. government is represented on screen in all the MCU films in phases 1 through 3. So the first 23, 24 films. And what we found is actually more often than not, government is on the side of the good guys. It's not helpless. It's not evil. More often than not, government is there and working with the heroes. So that's what we mean when we talk about the sort of subtle political messages that we find in these, you know, there's never sort of a scene where, you know, a hero is saying, oh, government is good or government is bad. But in the background, we're seeing government operate. And I wanted to know, you know, what's the message people are taking away?
And then, Lily, you looked at the role of nostalgia in the Marvel Cinematic Universe versus, you know, the way it's used in the political world now. What kind of things are you looking at?
Well, I was looking at the way that movies themselves are entities that are structured nostalgically. Your experience going to the movie often takes you to a different place that can make you yearn for a different time or experience. And so I was looking at the MCU broadly in terms of what is being presented in this way that would make somebody yearn for another time or a different construction of our current situation. And I found that there is a connection between both nationalism, particularly U.S. nationalism, and a kind of nostalgic yearning for heroics from times gone by. And, you know, Captain America is kind of obviously an embodiment of this because his life spans 100 years or more. But you also see this in some of the other franchises, like in WandaVision, where nostalgic sort of tempos are integrated into the entire series by presenting it as different sort of decades of sitcoms. And so you have a lot of woven into the MCU, a structural nostalgia. And I wanted to sort of think about that and understand that in terms of this whole cinematic universe. Is it just Captain America, or is there more than Captain America in terms of that sort of understanding?
We're talking about big screen superheroes and some of the political and social messages they may send with the editors of the new book, The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University. Nicholas Carnes, professor of public policy at Duke University. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts or questions about political messages, social messages that might show up in superhero pop culture, whether it's on the big screen or small screen or the small page? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lily Gorin and Nicholas Carnes, political scientist and editors of the new book called The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you followed some or all of these movies and TV shows in that Marvel world? Do you see political themes and messages in any superhero stories, print or screen? Do you like those messages? Do they bother you? A little of both sometimes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Waupun. Michael, hi.
Hi. Enjoying the conversation here. Many years ago, I was able to meet Stan Lee at a comic book convention. I brought my Silver Surfer comic, and he paused, and he looked at it, and he said, "Ah, Silver Surfer, he was always my favorite." And as a little fanboy, as a kid, that just made my day, that like my favorite character was Stan Lee's favorite character.
What is it about Silver Surfer that you and maybe Stan Lee appreciated?
Well, he's a character that sacrificed himself in order to save the planet Earth from the character Galactus. And then he became kind of a herald for him, just kind of searching the universe, looking for planets for him to devour. And it kind of expresses our own humanity and our own, maybe, you know, Galactus couldn't understand why he would do that.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Lily, this is kind of contrary to my point I brought up earlier. We're waiting for the superhero to save us. This is a case, this is a character who hasn't appeared in the Marvel Cinematic Universe yet, I don't think. But a normal person who sacrifices himself with a huge ethical decision, do you see in some ways superheroes being an inspiration for individual action in the political or social world?
Oh, I would say so. And of course, you do have a number of the MCU superheroes who are not, in fact, gifted with superpowers. Both Iron Man and also Black Widow are straight up human beings. They don't have special powers. And of course, Iron Man is a man in a can. And so he designed it and it does all kinds of stuff. But he is, you know, he is just a human being like the rest of us. And so I do think that there is a dimension, particularly of this understanding of what a hero is and who a hero is. And a couple of our authors really dig at that and sort of put it in context of, you know, how we can each, we might each be able to be heroes in particular ways. And what is it that makes a hero? You know, superheroes have these particular qualities and capacities. But the idea of a hero has much longer legs in a lot of ways.
Michael, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Hope you still have that autograph. That's pretty cool. Nick, we've talked a lot about, I think, U.S. politics and your work looks at the U.S. government in the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. But and the two of you write about this in your introduction. These are movies where people are hoping to make money all over the world that can lead to some compromises. A location, for example, in a Doctor Strange movie gets changed from Tibet to Nepal to not offend the Chinese government. How much does the global audience, you think, affect the messages, the choices we see?
Well, I just want to say first, I still have goosebumps from Michael's description of his interaction with Stan Lee.
Yeah,
I'm
cool.
A comic book fan myself and a fan of the genre. So I'm still reeling from that anecdote. I think that's a great example. Moving Kamar-Taj, Doctor Strange's sort of trainings, where Doctor Strange is trained, moving that from Tibet, which it is in the comics, to Nepal, which it is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is a great example of Marvel Studios and Disney really trying to avoid political controversy. Our first caller said, I don't see a lot of political messaging in here. I actually think that's not an accident. Disney's trying to appeal to global audiences and to a broad audience here in the U.S., and so they're really trying to stay out of political fights. They sometimes can't help themselves. Fans will pressure for, Disney or Marvel Studios for more representation or for less representation. They're going to be accused of being too woke or not progressive or not enough. And I think in this, the sort of capitalist or the sort of market impulse that's driving, a big corporation like Disney is always going to be avoid those controversies when you can. So I think you're going to see that not just internationally, but also in terms of the way they interact with domestic political debates.
Talking to Nick Carnes and Lily Gorin about the new book, they're co-editors of The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Lily, Nick just mentioned issues of representation. That occupies a good chunk of this book, different essays on how representation has changed over the years in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Can you talk about some of the things that the authors bring up?
Yeah, this is a really rich area of discussion in the book. All areas are excellent, but there were just a lot of different contributors who wanted to talk about different aspects of this question of representation. So there's questions of feminism that are explored in a number of places. There's questions of disability and trauma that is explored. There's this really fascinating chapter on how the Avengers are a kind of found family or built family. That was a really fascinating chapter when it first came across our desks and we started reading it. There are, of course, questions about masculinity, because that's so much of what is presented in symbolic ways throughout the MCU. There is a question of the MCU closet and who's still in it and sort of lack of representation in certain regards with regard to the LGBTQ+ community. So all of these different areas are sort of represented in different chapters. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion with regard to race and understanding a place like Wakanda, which is a kind of Afro-futurist paradise, if you will, and how that sort of stacks up against our understanding of the Black lived experience. So there's all kinds of stuff in there in terms of these many, many, many properties. And what they are communicating in terms of character development and narrative and symbols and our understanding of ourselves.
Nick, as a comics fan and a political scientist, I imagine you must bring this into the classroom sometimes. How do you talk to your students about how to read a text like a superhero movie and start to look for these kind of messages?
Well, so I sort of take a lot of cues from the scholars like Lily, who really have deep expertise on popular culture. I try to convey to students something that I learned from Lily, actually, which is to think about politics not just as elections, campaigns, debates, speeches, but to see politics as, you know, questions about power, representation, and how we live our lives. And once you sort of take that broader perspective on politics, you start to better, you know, see the politics that does exist in popular culture texts like the MCU. And you also better understand why people so often have real world political debates about what occurs in fictional, you know, storytelling. You know, why people will say, I don't like this character being depicted this way. It's because that's really a site where politics is happening, even in fiction, even in superhero stories. So I try to convey that to my students.
Just a few moments left. I'm going to put each of you on the spot and ask for a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie recommendation if somebody's going to see just one. Lily, you get to go first.
Thor Ragnarok.
Okay, easy. Quick line on why.
Because it's hysterically funny, and it really is an interesting exploration of, you know, sort of superheroics. And there are a variety of different sort of nods towards gender and race as well.
And Nick?
I'd have to go with Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 1 or 2.
Excellent. That is all the time we have. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thanks again.
Been talking to Nicholas Carnes, professor of public policy at Duke University, and Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University. They're the co-editors of the book we've been talking about. It's called The Politics of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They both had a quick pick. I like that. No hemming and hawing.